Let's get on with some question and slippery answers or clear, solid answers. Thank you. Okay, I've got a bearded gentleman right here in front.
Can you address the study done by the National Institute of Technology that tried to, particularly the one led by Dr. Shine Sunder, that follows the official story, claims that the temperatures inside the towers were well over 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit, and that their working hypothesis in the collapse of Building 7 was that it basically did the same thing as the towers did. That there was damage to a corner of that building from debris flying off.
Yeah.
I did see a photo that I've never seen before, just recently, showing some damage to the corner. But it doesn't explain how 100% failure occurred between that.
A 100% footprint failure.
Yeah.
Building 7, I might have mentioned, is so neat. Yeah.
I was going to add to that. I found another document also from the NIST, from a Dr. Frank Gale, that totally contradicts the temperature rating, that the temperatures inside the building could never reach anything over 500 degrees.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's preposterous. I've looked at the preliminary report. Now, they are due to be final this month, the NIST report, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. And a few people were urging me to comment. And then you look at all the hoops you got to jump through. Jim Hoffman, who's a very good researcher on the physics of 9/11, did reply, I believe. One of the things he had to do was basically hook into their approach and find something specifically wrong. And everything is wrong there. One of them is, as I understand it, the maximum temperature from jet fuel, which is kerosene, the stuff you put in your home heater, floor heater, has a maximum temperature under ideal conditions. Well, you can't augment, oxidize it and all this other steel mill type stuff, but under normal ambient conditions is 1530 or 1560 degrees Fahrenheit, and the melting point of steel is 2750 degrees Fahrenheit. I have a friend in the, it's good to have friends who know something, in the steel industry, one of these scrap electric, basically, mills. And they cook it up to 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit to get it molten. There's a margin there. So this is impossible. And besides, even this debate over the intensity and extent of the fires isn't very important, because their theory then requires that up in the upper structure, that steel weakened enough and then began a pancake collapse. Dot, dot, dot. Well, is that what you see? When you see it in real time, you just say, there's just no way. And these guys, these scientists and engineers are betraying their basic reason for being, which is to discover physical principles and apply them. They're traitors to their science. And that just infuriates me as an academic. The truth is they are just political operatives. So we can refute this. In sum, what it amounts to was in my June 9th article is no other theory has the breadth of controlled demolition, which accounts for all the facts, the physical facts. Then there's this secondary debate about how long it would take and to set up the building. So that's my general reply.
Just to stay on this track for a few minutes here as far as the controlled demolition of the buildings, I'm curious, considering that you're taking this from the prosecutorial standpoint of proving a case, I've researched this extensively, and it's very hard to find any credible independent structural or architectural engineers who have looked at the video evidence and the layout of these buildings and came out publicly and said, this is impossible.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, as a prosecutor, who you would call,
yeah,
where you could point,
yeah,
me.
Who are you going to call? Yeah, one of the now this is a problem. You put your finger on a very good problem, and that is very few, although some, technical and scientific and engineering people have come out on behalf of the this 9/11 research analysis I'm giving you, but too few by far. And what we have to do is look at why. Van Romero is Exhibit A. Remember him, the New Mexico Institute of Mining and Technology guy, who said in the Albuquerque Journal the day after 9/11, yeah, I saw it on television, and he is a demolition expert and a counterterrorism expert. And he said, yeah, it looks like a demolition to me because, it's got the usual properties. And then there was a retraction. He said he was all wrong. It was like 8 days later in the Albuquerque Journal. Albuquerque Journal didn't retract. They've always stood by it, although they removed it from their website. Well, then Van Romero gets all these new DOD grants. He was actually in Washington, D.C., lobbying for grants for his... he's like a dean of a college. He's an administrator in part. So there was him. Kevin Ryan comes to mind again, Underwriter's Lab. He's not he's an environmental scientist, but he wrote to the NIST director about his problems because UL, the Underwriter's Lab, had certified the strength of the steel, allegedly, according to Kevin, who's a really sweetheart guy. And he got fired. I asked him, did you think he'd get fired? Well, I knew there'd be ramifications, but no, he didn't expect to get fired. You know, well, welcome to politics. You know, welcome. So, and then, to make a more general comment, all I would do is pile on this. You get the point. But engineers have said a lot of stupid things. So Jim Hoffman makes that a very good point. And finally, the engineers are hand in glove with the state. You got to be licensed. You got to be certified. You're dependent on grants. You're dependent on zoning. You're dependent on being in good with the government because government's so heavily involved in building.
And aren't there any though that have come out that you can like give this man a name?
Okay, I'm a member of this group 911physics.org, which has some technical people. But I don't think we have a structural engineer. We have pilots. We have intelligence experts. We have mathematicians and physics people, PhDs in various fields. So one of my ideas was, no, I don't have a particular name. Even if you go overseas, though, there's this firm in Turkey that did the analysis of one of the Meridian Plaza fire, etc. It's very hard because they're in the same jam with the government. So you need a retiree. There have been, now that I think about it, we got to make up a little list. There are people, there's the university in Switzerland where Einstein did his famous work on theory of relativity. There's one guy there who's spoken up. So Europe is a pretty good source, not the U.S.
The Heavy Engineering Research Association of New Zealand did a study. The author is Charles Clifton, and I understand that among engineers, this is the one that is most respected. HERA report, H-E-R-A, Heavy Engineering Research Association.
Okay.
It concluded that there could not have been a fire and that the core columns had to be destroyed to get the class.
So they're supporting my point of view and yours, presumably. Okay. That's H-E-R-A?
H-E-R-A.
Yeah, in New Zealand. Okay. Yeah, and there have been a lot of these studies, too, where how much, no steel frame skyscraper had ever fallen but for the three that day. And in Britain, there was a study with an engine, a parking garage, you know, measuring temperatures of fires and whether it could bring it down. And no, the answer is no. So, in other words, there are pre-9/11 physical evidence supporting our analysis of what happened on 9/11. Yes?
It seems like there's some researchers who are focusing on what happened on the day of 9/11, and so there's a focus on of that evidence, of course, I mean, it's been removed. Bechtel went in there and just took everything away, moved it away. So I have concerns about the provability of that.
Yeah.
There are also researchers who are focusing on the whodunit aspect, like Nafees Ahmed and Ray McGovern, who look at connections between the CIA and Muslim front groups and terrorist groups.
Yeah.
Because they're all the way back to Bosnia and beyond. So, you know, I thought about the opportunity cost that may come from pursuing something that may...
I would say that all pieces of the truth are welcome, but physical impossibility is the number one way to go. Physical evidence trumps eyewitness testimony, for example. All is good, though. With respect to Nafees Ahmed, I'm very concerned about him. His first book was... The War on Truth. That was a very good book, 2002 maybe. His latest book, The War on Freedom, was the first book. And the second one is The War on Truth. Anyway, this new book, I saw him at this 9/11 event over July 22, and when he talks about, I'm just interested in facts without theory. Yeah, that's a nonsense position intellectually, and we need both, and you need to test the theories against facts. New facts discovered lead to modified theories and being able to discriminate amongst them. And this business about just chasing these Al-Qaeda, this business about independent terrorist groups that amount to anything, that's nonsense. That's rubbish. Every terrorist group, they don't, as Tarpley establishes beyond a reasonable doubt in his book, they don't grow out of oppression and mass poverty and the like. They are either A, set up by the intelligence services, and you know it's necessary enemies, best of enemies, or B, if they are established independently, believe me, they are quickly infested by double agents, and they aren't independent. It's just Nafees Ahmed is kind of pursuing the whole wrong implicit theory. Explicit theories are good. Implicit theories are not good. Yes?
I was just wondering, I'm still a little bit confused. Is your view that no airplanes hit the towers, even though we saw some? And if so, if airplanes did hit the towers, as you said, where are the parts?
Yes.
Okay.
I wish I could give you the answer to that. My suspicion is no, but I can't establish that beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, what we have here, just to be clear, it's much easier to prove that the official account is false, right? And I've done a good deal of that here. And there's more, of course, far more. But then the other thing is, what actually happened? Or what? Maybe a third thing is, what does Reynolds actually believe happened? That third thing is probably not very important. But my suspicion is, what I start with is exactly what you mentioned, and that is, hey boss, where's the plane? There ain't no plane. Now here's the wildest theory. I don't know what theory is right. Sometimes I lean, okay, it could have been a 737, maybe it's small enough, but that's not even small enough for that 82-foot fracture spread in the South Tower. Okay, it's not going to work even for a 737. But then I say, and some people believe it was a 737 with a missile, and that accounts for the flash. You know, there's a flash before impact on the videotape in the South Tower. Okay, so the short answer is I don't know. And here's the wildest theory that is still, I can't reject, it's still on the table. Holograms. That's the wildest one. But yeah, maybe. But it really bothers me that the physical evidence is close to zippo for these plane crashes, you know, and it's at all four sites. You know what would why this is still a viable theory? One reason is, why wasn't there any defense? There wasn't anything to defend against for NORAD and FAA. Okay? But no, I'm not strongly advocating. We got to work that problem some more. Yes. Let me get him. You're next.
Well, you can speak about the interests you had in when the government mentioning Israel, who the firms were that were in the weekend before the Tuesday 9/11 event, working on the offices ostensibly, possible connections to the fellows who were dancing on top of the event, etc.
No, I don't know enough here to give you that kind of inside poop. Really, now, right now, we're getting close to the professional killers who aren't going to be well known. And some of them are dead, no doubt. Now, you know, the problem with being a professional killer is you tend to get killed yourself, especially after the job is done. But Israel and the Mossad are involved in various companies. Remember, there was one of the companies that abandoned its space in the World Trade Center? Looking suspiciously as if they had advanced information. There was Odigo, the instant messaging firm that heard about it and abandoned their shop 2 hours before the attack. Amdocs and Converse. Israeli firms, I think they're in the same neighborhood or suburb as Mossad. Amdocs does all the telephone billing, nearly all, in the United States, 99% plus. So they know who calls who. Now, that doesn't mean that doesn't directly say he had eavesdropped on calls, but isn't that convenient, you know? So there's lots of things going on, and you mentioned the moving company, the high-fiving guys taping the Trade Center disaster, and hey, this is great. But even, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu said, hey, this is good for Israel, right? It's one of these kind of open secrets. But I don't have any details on exactly what the role of the Mossad was, or MI6. I just suspect them.
Did you follow what happened to
him? I followed it, but he got bounced. I don't know if he's appealing.
He got bounced for presidential immunity. So how would you...
Well, that's one of the barriers you have to break in a civil suit. This is Stanley Kramer Hilton. Stanley Hilton's lawsuit. The former staff director for Robert Dole, among other things, and he's brought forward a suit on civil grounds on behalf of the victims. And he lost. See, there are like five standards you have to make to get your case in court. And in effect, he lost on that. He was arguing that we had an interest as taxpayers. And according to a lawyer in another 9/11 session, this has only worked one time in history. In other words, you need standing, legal standing. But you have the sovereign immunity veil to pierce as well. There are other things. The Fitzgerald? I don't know what to believe. We don't have any real firm information. Some people hold the bulldog Fitzgerald is going to, he's got to hold the one thread and he's going to unravel the whole thing. Show me. I don't believe that. I'm suspicious about his background. Now, he does have the full power of the Attorney General. That was written into the thing when John Ashcroft recused himself. So I don't think he can be fired in some kind of a midnight firing. So he's got potential. This man here, he's next. I overlooked you.
Quick question, which you can probably answer then. Some of the photographs showed vertical smoke coming out from the towers that were projected like this.
Oh, yeah. Puffs. Demolition waves. Right. How does the NIST handle that, right? You know, we have overwhelming photographic and video evidence of the... Here's another thing: was the top 300 feet or so of the South Tower I think they made a mistake. They severed the core early. The thing was at 23 degree angle, and then they just disintegrated the whole dang thing, you know, to get it semi footprint.
So was that, was any of that issue addressed in the 9/11 report?
No. But here's something funny about, was it addressed in the 9/11 report? No, nothing inconvenient. Nothing inconvenient. No inconvenient facts were addressed in the 9/11 report. Without much of a hyperbole, I can defend that. But here's one thing that struck me here again, gallows humor. On page 305 of the 9/11 Commission report, there's a sentence that says, the South Tower collapsed within 10 seconds. They don't even realize what's implied by that. So they, and this is an exaggeration, it probably took 15 seconds for the South Tower to collapse. But what's seconds among friends? But what they're admitting is a free fall collapse. There's no resistance at the lower floors. How do you get that? You blow it away. Okay, let me go back in a little semicircle here. One, two, three. One. You want to come up front? It's okay with me. Just don't overstay your welcome the way I'm doing. Okay. Meantime, who else back there in that semicircle have your hand up?
I'm wondering if you've heard anything about the possibility of electromagnetic.
I have heard about it. In other words, some people believe there were exotic explosive techniques.
Well, beam energy, right?
Yeah, beam energy. Could be. These guys had access to conventional military stuff, which is more potent than civilian. So some people have claimed there was a mini nuke used. I don't know what the readings were for radioactivity, but so I don't know. Possible. I'd entertain it, but I don't know enough to evaluate that. Yes, sir.
Thank you. I'm Nathan Haddon. I'm a student of Green State College, and I was just going to announce that I thought people might want to see who's here today, who Rachel Corey was. She was the girl that went over to Gaza and got killed by the bulldozer. The family was actually still alive, and they were just in Olympia. Only she was killed out front of the Palestinian house. And then this was Colin Reese, who was her boyfriend this fall, who died this fall while he was in graduate school. I had some information. I've done a lot of the peace stuff at the Evergreen State College as well with a bunch of other group of people.
And your name,
there,
sir?
Nathan Haddon, which I said earlier. But I've done a lot of the peace stuff there and have some information also. One thing I have found out is from this live right here, I've gotten some flight information that Dave Beck at KOW is looking into, who has family and I believe himself has used to work at Boeing in Seattle. I found that in 2001, 2000, and then several years later, earlier, 1999, 2000, also 2000, and I don't know. These were right before wars, but the 2001 was an attack in Iraq.
Nathan, what I was saying, they want to talk to you afterwards.
Sure. What I found is that there's these plane crashes have not been cataloged in the New York Times list where they catalog very important events, and these should have been cataloged with all the other plane crashes as well.
Sir, I have a question.
Sure.
Professor Reynolds.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, Nathan, you're off. If people want to talk to you afterward, okay, thanks.
Hi, Professor Reynolds, I'd like to know if you could talk a bit about the phone calls or
the cell phone conversation, yeah, or air phone. 9/11 physics.org has some interesting analysis about how these could be faked. I think the first thing to say is that cell phone conversations were impossible in 2001 at altitudes above 8,000 feet at normal jetliner speeds. 450 miles an hour plus. Impossible. Okay? And so the technology, you know, to maintain these power connections and the planes moving too fast and da da. So I don't believe in these cell phone conversations at these normal altitudes that above 8,000 feet. And there have been a couple of good diagnoses of this. Then, secondly, of the they don't release. Let's see the documentation for these calls. They could release that. It's just like me asking for serial numbers on parts that you've allegedly recovered. They don't give us that. Thirdly, you have the dialogue. Hello. Hello, Mom. This is Mark Bingham. And there's one piece, you know, Todd M. Beamer, a lot of people are searching all these different accounts to see if he actually existed. I know this sounds crazy, but, you know, Ms. Beamer did this best-selling book. Some of these victims' names, I'm very convinced, are fake. The cell phone deal is, come on, you know, this is crap. On Flight 77, which wasn't even scheduled, we know that didn't fly into the Pentagon. They had for years only Barbara Olson's call, alleged, to Theodore Olson. And, you know, the Solicitor General who said, yeah, there are lots of occasions when government has to lie. Yeah, and Barbara supposedly saying, what should I tell the pilot? Come on, help. In other words, this is drivel, absolute drivel.
One question kind of the same is that isn't there a passenger list or something?
There's another problem. Passenger manifests should be a routine thing. And what did they do? The major media, CNN, I believe, was first, came out with these passenger lists that didn't add up to the alleged total. There were always a few names different in subsequent passenger manifests. There were no Arab names ever on the passenger list. You know, it's just like if you look at Paul Thompson's Terror Line book, which has all these dots unconnected, but these dots from the mainstream media, Honey Hanger may not have had a ticket. You think you're going to get on an airplane even pre-9/11 without a ticket? You know, it's just ridiculous. And they had, 19 screening failures at the gate. You know, it just goes on and on. Nothing adds up everywhere you look. Okay, Nathan, I'll get to you after a couple more people.
What about the building number 7 again? What evidence do you have that it was used as a control?
Oh, yeah.
Location? And also there was something about a fire department official, maybe the chief, was instructed by the owner of the building to take it down or something like that. I saw it.
Yes. What's yes. Okay. Now on WTC-7, was the 23rd floor used as a control center? I say yes, but I can't offer you proof beyond a reasonable doubt. What I can offer you is a very plausible theory. 23rd floor of the building 7 was a $10 million Office of Emergency Management site. This was mocked in New York long as Rudy's Bunker. It was hurricane window proof. It had its own air and water supply. It had a wonderful view of the demolition. You need to be on site to do one of these. You ain't going to do it from your laptop long distance. It's very plausible that it was engineered from there, and you could have also, if there were planes that were remote controlled by Global Hawk technology, as Eric Hushman argues in Painful Questions, this is 2002, that was a great homing place and monitoring place, so you could have done both from that location. Now, so it was plausible. It's plausible. Then we have the question of, I'm blanking out here. Senior moment. Let me go to it's 23rd floor. But there was a second part of your question that I'm not addressing.
The fire department's involvement there.
Oh yeah, Now, that one is very clear and beyond any dispute. Larry Silverstein, on a Nova PBS documentary, who is the leaseholder, says, this is quoted, it's on film, and there's been no denial or clarification or refutation or anything. He says, oh, I remember that afternoon I'm talking to the chief on site, and I said to him, you know, there's been so much, this is about 4 p.m. in the afternoon on 9/11, there's been so much suffering and so much loss and devastation. Maybe it's just better to pull the building. That's slang for demolition. And lo and behold, an hour or so later, it's imploded in an entirely conventional demolition. They didn't over-explode it the way they did the towers, right? It just implodes very neatly. So you can't do that in an hour or hour and a half, right? You need to study the building and lace it up good with the right kind of explosives. And it's just, on tape, there's no question about how that thing, you know, that tower, the cupola, the greenhouse up there kind of goes down, and the whole thing, it's all an interior collapse.
Is that the official version there was an intended demolition by the fire department?
No. Yeah. No, I haven't heard that. Yeah. Their response is the great, the all-time serving response, which is called silencio. Yeah. Well, let me go back here and get to you next. I'm sorry. I've been holding this wonderful lady here in reserve. Yes.
Very simply, physical evidence, insurance company, Larry Silverstein. Did the insurance company pay him? How much?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, remember, part of this is, I'm sure, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm sure it's offset by some of this after-the-fact bailout money that we taxpayers are generous and open wallet, open purse all the time, you know. So some of it was probably offset. I've seen it alleged that actually Silverstein, I don't know whether I believe this, was actually a straw buyer and is a stand-in for various kind of ugly Wall Street investment bankers, et cetera, you know. So I don't know if he's collected, but I'll bet you his bunch has profited. Whether they collect it, it's like a maybe to some extent a lawsuit award where you go collect, right? The courts might award you, but there is a collection problem. Yes.
I thought that the relatives of the people on the airplane did get a settlement.
Well, we had that kind of hush money fund that was extraordinary, if that's what you're thinking of, where you had to give up all rights to sue. It was all victims of 9/11, not just passenger victims. And that's a secret list, by the way. I tried to get that. It's a secret. You can't find out who was awarded the money. They give you the overall statistics, you know, like 1.8 million overall, and different classes of victims, what the average settlement was, the statistical distribution, but you can't find out who got the awards. There was an interim list of applicants. They closed that window fairly early, as I recall, maybe late 02 or early 03. But one of the conditions was that you surrendered the right to sue anybody for anything connected with 9/11. That's why it's called hush. Hush up. Some people, like Ellen Mariani, didn't. And Philip Berg took up her case in a RICO. I don't know where that stands, but he now has William Rodriguez, the heroic janitor who saved many lives on 9/11, as the plaintiff, the lead plaintiff. Okay, next.
Well, I just wanted to add that National Geographic is an area of these, a three-part documentary on, called Inside 9/11. In the conclusion, I didn't see the other part, but in the conclusion, they completely omit that the collapse of Building 7.
Yeah. You know, I think our focus on Building 7 is well taken in that among many smoking guns, that'd be my lead candidate. They can't. What are they going to do with that? What can they do with that? Yes, sir.
Thank you. I want to check. This is about still engagement. I met somebody who believes that there might have been a bomb in the building. That's a problem basis, and that can address maybe the most steel problems. The other questions that I have are about trying to put a thing what's called Social Security, which is a whole Social Security system. I saw it on the website, I don't know if anybody's aware of that. And also ask anybody about their thoughts about the rebuilding of the towers and making them supposed to be taller than they would be in all the plans doing that.
I don't know about, I'd just comment on one part of that, and that is, I don't know anything about this direct connection with Social Security, but, of course, there were a lot of records lost by the SEC, the IRS, etc., that is of interest. In addition, something like $100 million was run through on credit cards mysteriously minutes before the collapse of one or the other towers that... Here again, swept under the rug, as far as I know. Yes, sir, behind Nathan.
I was going to bring up that SEC, their investigatory files, and I was assuming I was hoping to back up some of that after that. And it is 7, I believe, taller than the Great Bank Building.
It's 47 stories, yeah, so. Yeah, it would be a tall building in many American cities. Absolutely, right. And yet it's widely overlooked. I have a bumper sticker on my pickup truck which says, what happened to WTC-7? And my exterminator guy came the other day and he says, what's that about? I'm glad you asked. Okay, over here.
Would you agree that in things like this you're speaking to the choir?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, so... What I want to know, what I'm waiting to hear from someone like you that is putting information out, is what is the one thing that would rock the world with most American people that would make them focus on this issue? Because if you're speaking at a mall, a bunch of mall shoppers, and you start talking about the fact that there were no planes in the towers, you're going to lose a lot of credit right there.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So I would like to hear from you what you think is one issue that can be focused on super intensity that would affect enough people in this country where this thing would start getting some legs, because I think we all agree that cost is the most important issue of our life.
Okay, yeah. The right thing to say here is to clarify, and that is, I consider myself a 9/11 researcher. I'm only an activist secondarily. You know, I respond to... I recognize some responsibility in that direction. So investigating the whole planes issue does, I agree with you, have a political cost of sorts in the short run at least. But I'm out after the truth and justice, not necessarily in that order. But, and more directly answer your question, the number one thing we should bring to the public is controlled demolition in New York. Because that's just... well, I don't know. I'm not that much of a marketing genius. To me, it's a very powerful thing. I see them all as that triplet, all three buildings being brought down by controlled demolition is our number one piece of evidence. And that's what should be marketed and campaigned on to get people's attention. Because it can be proved up back and forth and crossways, sideways, every ways. Yes, sir.
Going to a point you made on your mission, the 9/11 mission, and the possibility of participating in the mainstream media, Daniel Hofstadter's book, you know, that Welcome to Charlotte, he's the investigative journalist that looked into what was happening in Florida right after 9/11 and how the FBI immediately gave up this investigation of this, you know, the biggest murder, or the biggest homicide in U.S. history.
Right.
As soon as the anthrax scares the president, pulled all the way in South Florida, that case is still open. But recently there's been this able danger story that has been in the media, although the mainstream media involves the SOCOM operation underneath which there was a data mining operation where a year before 9/11 took place, they had names like Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shaibi and others, and they were ready to present these materials to the FBI, but depending on somehow silence this operation, and Representative Kirk Weldon from Pennsylvania, Republican too, I saw one story on Fox was immediately about on the internet, you know, actually get these channels, CNN or Fox, it's been hitting the media a little bit, and he said that the 9/11 Commission is going to have an angle of its face because it didn't include this story in its report. So I was wondering what you thought of the possibility of something like people danger getting other people like David Ray Griffin into mainstream media.
Well, I'm not impressed by this whole approach about tracking the movements of the Arab, the alleged Arab hijackers before 9/11, and that whole, that's all about patsies and false flag deal. What you really want to know is the moles, the insiders, the witting participants in the U.S. government and outside it, and the professional killers who actually, you know, press the buttons and lace up buildings and the whole nine yards. So to me, you know, it's just, you know, Karl Rove is a master at this kind of confusion where you give people a piece of the truth, ugly as it is, and that sends them off into this. Then you give him another piece that I thought it was like, you know, he was the insider with this, the guy who did the book on George W. Bush before his election, called Fortunate Son, who turned up dead, mysteriously suicide in a Springdale, Arkansas motel room, you know, and guess who his inside contact was? Karl Rove. This poor guy, whose name escapes me right now, the author didn't realize, you know, what the kind of double agent he's dealing with here. Ma'am, did you have your hand up here?
Thank you. I didn't know about what's the Florida homicide thing. I haven't heard that before.
Here's our local expert in the back. And I know that's a wild goose chase, in my opinion. You know, that's just tracking down the movements of patsies. You know, ma'am, in the back, yes. Yeah, and has been misplaced. I don't know about that. I have heard it alleged that there was gold and then the. Yes, if true, if they're spiriting it away in advance, that's for sure. Ma'am, we'll go here, then back, da da. Okay, yes, go ahead. Yeah, I mean, there was an I don't know the details of that. Of course, I'm suspicious, yes, because the FBI informant was involved. And the thing was, it might have been botched. It might have been by design. You're not going to bring down a tower with one of these truck bombs, believe me. You know, that. Yeah.
Alex Jones, in his video, 9/11 Broken Tyranny, covers that pretty well, that it was an FBI operation.
Yeah, FBI was inside that whole thing. And some of the right-thinking people in the FBI said, hey, how can you let this go on? Anonymously, I think, reporting that. But, yeah, the ever since the JFK assassination, in my opinion, it's just gotten bolder and bolder. And that, and the Trade Center bombing in 93 is one of those murderous stunts along the way. Okay, back here.
What became the two brothers that captured the video of the
Naudet brothers? Yes, the alleged French brothers. They call it the fireman video. Fireman's video. Yeah. What about it, dude? Well, here's I think there are some valid and interesting parts of that film. However, overall, I think it's part of the PSYOPs operation that 9/11 is. You know, 9/11 is number one, an inside job. Number two, it's a media event to manipulate the public. And the Naudet brothers' film, the award-winning documentary, 9/11, is part of that second media manipulation. We don't have a whole lot of eyewitness testimony, for example, about this airliner thundering down the length of Manhattan, which is 13 miles long, you know, to the southern end, to run into this North Tower. What we do have, however, is this kind of fake-looking scene where the chief and a couple of others are investigating this supposed natural gas leak. And then, fortunately, we're well-positioned. We're 10 blocks north of the North Tower, okay? And fortunately, they hear this, the cameraman, one of the Naudet brothers, and then he puts his camera up, and he sees something going in to the North Tower. And it takes the right length of time. Took about 5 seconds to go the 10 blocks. Okay, you know, I timed this out to see where they screwed up. And however, you can sit there with the DVD, of course, and go pause, and watch every frame, 30 frames per second. And I defy anybody, and this has been pointed out on the web by Gerard Holmgren and the Web Fairy, etc., Serendipity. You can't tell what the hell that thing is. That flying object. It's a what's it? It's a flying blob, blurb. It's a flying pig. You know, it's just, it's not recognizable as a 767 or any aircraft. Okay? Now, I'm not saying whatever it was totally injected. They're playing games with pixels. It might have been a flying something, but it sure as heck is not recognizable as a 767. And supposedly they're using professional equipment. You could go out there with anything and do a better job to film this thing. So, and then the South Tower's got big problems too. So, you know, then they're down at the South Tower filming this thing. Wow, these guys are great. They know where to be. and the South Tower crash, we have about 5 or 6 different videos. I don't trust any of them. Okay, now somebody up front here was I'm derelict in my order here, but what do we say? We have a couple more, maybe 3 more questions. I got one back here.
Hi. What do you think in terms of where the imperial powers will go next? Like, from what I've seen, like Iran and stuff. I don't know. In the larger picture.
Yeah. Okay, well, there's a great open-ended softball for me to expound on. But it's a good question. One thing that comes to mind is how the neocons say, everybody wants to go to Baghdad, real men want to go to Tehran. Right? And Iran has been the number one target for these guys. But I don't think they have, and it's 2.5 times the size of Iraq. It's 59 million people or so. I mean, it's mountainous. This is one hell of a thing to conquer when we can't handle Iraq with our pretty thin boots on the ground. It's just ridiculous. So that's why Cheney full-floated this balloon about nuke weapons. You know, only, you know, combat level type stuff. We won't vaporize the whole country. But this is the kind of madmen that are in charge. And America sits you back, I don't know, what the hell? We got a reality show, you know, whatever. We got the NFL. Well, it's just outrageous. And, like I said in the talk, it's not even about directly these guys, the Iranians, who are viewed long-term as our enemies. Ever since, you know, we brought down Mossadegh, a socialist not to our liking, put in the Shah of Iran, and then those damn Ayatollahs and blah, blah, they held our diplomats at bay, you know, night after night. And Iran is a real big enemy of ours. You know, Israel is a big friend of ours, and Iran's a big enemy. And, oh, man. And it's about, if you were Putin, right, or the Chinese, what are you saying? I'm not allowing this to go on. They've been playing it pretty conservatively so far. But so that's what the imperial ambition, they don't have the means. Now, here's, finally, the Madrid bombing reaction has been hugely helpful in deterring these guys from the next murderous stunt. Because they're not quite sure anymore what the reaction is going to be. In Madrid, it was, vote these assholes out, you know. Get rid of this Aznar and these other guys who are complicit with this imperialist ambition. There's nothing in it for us except blood and loss of treasure, right? And now they're not quite sure. I was worried, but it's still, hey, they're still in power, so they could do it. But my target would have been, it might have been multiple targets, but it's going to be the West Coast would be mine, or Houston. It'd be Houston, L.A., might be harbor related. It would be small nuke. They'll keep the loss of life. This is just pure speculation, obviously, but I've thought about it. What would I do? Because I need a new writ of permission to continue my crazy stuff. And now his ratings would only still go to 90%, probably only go to 80%. But they're worried about they might go from 41% down to 25 or 30%. How can you fail on the job again? Or, like we know, you did it again, right? So that the Madrid bombing reaction has given them pause. And let's see, we had back here. Yes.
I mostly refer to the Ukrainian planning who probably best known for this. Bush personally ordered it to happen against some very incriminating documents, as my witnesses, Bush personally ordered this event to happen in order to gain political advantage on behalf of the neocons and their deluded thinking in the Middle East. If he had that kind of evidence, or even alleged himself to have it, how could he possibly have lost his case by summary dismissal? What was the justification?
Well, he could. He could have such evidence, I doubt it, but he could, and still have his case rejected. Because the courts... Remember, here's the thing. They got these barriers, these tests to get your case in court. Despite the complaints about all this litigation, they really do have serious screens, and he couldn't surmount them. That's what I would argue. On the substance, I really doubt that the moron in chief was the leader planner that is suggested by that very strong claim. To put it on the other end, Tarpley, his conjecture is that while Bush had some information about this on the morning of 9/11, he actually wasn't at the level that Cheney was. And Cheney and a lot of smart guys did this. And this rogue network, argues Tarpley, and I don't say he's got it proved up beyond a reasonable doubt either, but it's an interesting alternative view. He argues that this code angel, where they had the codes, actually happened. When they said, Air Force One, you're next, that was the signal that it is inside, and it's rogue, and it's actually not Bush's direct doing, but he surrendered the power that day. And goes the argument, he couldn't get to Offutt, the SAC headquarters in Nebraska, directly, so they landed, they refueled in Louisiana, headed up there, and supposedly, now this doesn't quite fit, but supposedly says, here I am, my finger's on the nuclear button. Because the whole problem, goes Tarpley, was that all these other major governments know what happened on 9/11. They knew right away. Okay? Like a lot of us did. Some smart people did, though, because they followed this over the years. But they knew right away. And then the issue is, what are these guys going to... Are they going to go nuclear right now? So there was a nuclear crisis that was the public doesn't know about. And Putin's kind of played this role. He says, I'm going to give them all the rope they need to hang themselves. They'll get bogged down in Iraq, etc. I'll just play nice. You know, that Bush and Putin are buddies. Even Putin's cut from the same cloth, by the way, of course. He's a KGB, FSB. You know, he's had the stunts, murderous stunts like this, blame it on the Chechens, all the usual stuff.
That's
yes.
A long way of explaining Bush's reaction.
Yeah, doesn't he look like, to me, he looks like a bad actor, but during the campaign he promised that he's not very smart, and he's got all this cocaine and alcohol damage and so everything, but he'd have smart people around him, and you know, Andrew Carg is a smart guy. He addressed our group, our little group, for example. They had a lot of the Bush appointees, you know, building loyalty and Card's a smart guy, and Card didn't tell him what to do. You know, and Ari Fleischer is holding up a card in the classroom off camera. Don't say anything now. So Bush still sits there with that book. It's upside down, you know, the goat book.
Is that true?
Yeah. What?
Is that true what you just
said? Ari Fleischer?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not disputed. Yeah. He'd written on a card, don't say anything now. So they had something for him scripted at 9:30. Remember, he made a statement. Yes. No, officer, I'm going right behind you here. He's had his hand up. He's been patient.
If you look at what the gag order on Central.
Well, I know of it. I don't know that I can say I've seen the gag order. But John Ashcroft, then Attorney General, he used this Official State Secrets Act to hush her up. And she's still under it, although, and I believe she's complying with the order, but she's dancing around it, saying everything but whatever she's banned from saying, right?
Who is this?
Sybil Edmonds, the translator at the FBI, whose colleague recruited her into some kind of a terrorist network, and then she's been told to shut up and not, et cetera. Okay, we have, yes, sir, you. Okay, one more, and that's it, right? We're at 4 o'clock.
The analogy best seems to be World War II. You guys went with the Pearl Harbor incident. Just to assess the likelihood of success in exposing the truth, let's see what happens 60 years afterward. Now, we have...
Guaranteed truth then. But we want it a lot sooner. You know, America may not be here in any way, shape, or form, and we're close to full fascism, so let's hope for better.
Intellectuals at the time, Charles Beard and Harry Grant, other revisionist historians, had nailed it between 49 and the early 50s, 52. They had sent out very convincing books, but they didn't have the actual documents, but still it was sufficient to convince anyone. And then the day of infamy came, the day of deceit came out, which actually had the documents.
Yeah, that's by the author Robert fill in the blank right now, it escapes me, who proved that the Navy had the code, the military codes, correct. Stinnett, yes, thank you.
But at the same time, we're looking at this, that exposure of this, and these historians exposed this at the time, And it was widely known, I think, to people of consequence. So what do we say here now? We say, okay, let's write things by getting the truth out, and then once we get the truth out, then things will change.
Yeah.
But actually, this system we have in America seems to be one of the most beautiful systems in a way that it's a slavery unlike the other countries. It's a slavery where we as Americans have no idea that we're enslaved.
It's the best kind of slavery, I guess. Huh?
Player Piano by Kurt Vonnegut, and he makes this point several times about Americans who see them all as slaves. And I say this too, it's a beautiful system of slavery. We actually have the illusion of conducting our own affairs.
Reading Jim Morrison's book, Ruled by Secrecy, you get a lot of answers.
Yeah, Jim Myers, I've read his Inside Job book, and that's excellent. I should read his Rule by Secrecy. I think that's he's a good author, very good. But to go to your question, yeah, it's one of these, hey, Morgan, tell me exactly the route to freedom and wealth and punishment of the bad guys forever and ever, and I don't have that, unfortunately. One bit of correction came here recently when Congress, I believe it was in 1999, finally stood up and admitted that the two scapegoats, the Army and Navy commanders at Pearl, were not guilty as charged, right? Now that also explains how they've improved their act here. They meaning the conspirators. The reason that they punish nobody, right? No accountability for bad performance, knowing or unwitting on 9/11 is scapegoats ain't going to fly very well. You're encouraging resistance, especially tarring the innocent. And these two commanders out there were deliberately set up. Everybody knew it. The reason FDR, of course, allowed the Japanese and provoked them by years of measures was because Americans, the public opinion was so against entering a war in Europe after the Great War that they knew they needed a big-time provocation. And here's what's really another one of these stupid details of history is that while the Day of Infamy, of course, meant we went to war with Japan, 3 days later, Hitler had dodged around it. He didn't want to go to war with America. But Intrepid, the basis for 007, Ian Fleming agent, they'd set him up with this fake letter that Hitler believed that said FDR was going to go to war without the authorization of the United States Congress, which was still respected then. That was the last time it was respected in history that only Congress can declare war. So Hitler said, I'm going to get the jump on these guys. You know, it's going to happen. I'm going to go to war before FDR. So Hitler pulled the trigger stupidly against America. And that's gave us the authorization to go to war, which is just with Germany. I mean, Japan was always viewed as a secondary enemy. Okay, I believe we're done, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
I just wanted to mention that Mr. Reynolds flew in here last night at midnight to do this talk, and for airfare only. He's not didn't want anything for his time and to talk to us.
Thank you very much. It's 5 minutes past four. I'm at the Central Library in downtown Portland. The meeting has let out, and we're on our way back to the station. Glenn Owen, Cable News.